Welcome to another edition of Lex Talk History, a podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the Lexington History Museum. Now, here's your hosts, Lexington History Museum Executive Director Mandy Higgins and WUKY's own Alan Lytle.
Hello again, Mandy.
Hi, Alan.
Wow, what an April we've just been through.
Incredible April. Thankfully, we've got some spring weather and all the great things about Lexington are back with Keeneland and the fun. And then what a 250 month with the written word and music. It's been fantastic.
Absolutely. A different type of musical expression throughout the month. And of course, the spoken word. And we had a great podcast with the one and only DeBron Thomas.
Just an incredible. I hope that folks really took a minute to listen to what DeBron had to say and the importance of the music community in Lexington. And, you know, shout out to DeBron and Silas House and Tyler Childers for just writing the and making such beautiful art that is truly so fun for all of us in Lexington.
And the museum stayed busy.
And the museum stayed really busy. We hosted events, oral history seminar. So your friend Doug Boyd was with us, Alan, which was great. We had some visits from school kids from Eastern Kentucky coming up to learn a little bit about Lexington, which was really, really exciting. You know, 60 middle schoolers running around the museum is always great. And, you know, we're just working really diligently towards getting our 250 exhibit open and some really fun partnerships coming up with May being Diversity Month in 250. We've got a couple partnerships with the International Friendship Group, which is a group of women who have met for 50 years in Lexington from all the various immigrant communities that make up Lexington. So that's really exciting. And of course, May is also the 200th anniversary of General Lafayette's visit to Lexington. And so there's lots happening with that as well.
That leads us right into Let's Get Into It.
Yes. So we, are so excited at the museum to support the efforts of many people in Lexington to commemorate the 200th anniversary of General Lafayette's visit to the city. Massive event, 2-year nationwide tour for Lafayette in 1823 to 1825, coming back to the America that he helped create through his participation in the American Revolution. And from the museum side, we are supporting Keeneland Library, who will have an event on May 15th open to the public, commemorating General Lafayette's stay with the Bowman family at Keene Place. All of that information is available at Keeneland Library's website. But get excited because there's like period appropriate cocktails, which is awesome. So our friend Rhoda is helping make that possible, Rhoda Furr at the Keeneland Library. But today we are joined by Lexington History Museum board member emeritus Bill Swinford, who knows the Lafayette story, particularly in Lexington, backwards and forwards. Hi, Bill.
Hello, Mandy.
I'm so glad you're here.
Well, I am too. This has been an interest of mine since 1980. I was telling Alan before you came, I played Lafayette in Christmas in the Park, Gratz Park in 1980, a production put on by my mother, Frances Keller Swinford Barr, and by Carolyn Sled. And I was the guinea pig to play Lafayette, although I couldn't speak French. So, and that was put on by the Bluegrass Trust in Gratz Park. But let's get right to it.
Yeah, okay? Tell me about Lafayette coming to Lexington.
Lafayette came to Lexington. He arrived at Keene Place on May 15th, and that's why we're having this event on May 15th at Keene Place, which is now owned by Keeneland. Colonel Bowman had been an officer with Lafayette during the Revolutionary War. His house is on Bowman's Mill Road, and it wasn't on a direct path from Versailles, where Lafayette was traveling from Louisville, Shelbyville, Frankfort, Versailles. So they moved it to his daughter's house and son-in-law, Major Keene. Now, I think Major Keene was in the War of 1812.
Okay.
So, but Bowman was there and greeted Lafayette as he, you know, came up the roadway from Versailles and up the long driveway to Keene Place, and there was a ball there. And it's really interesting. That was on May 15th, but a lot of these histories that you read, and there I'll get into some of them coming up, they say his visit to Lexington was May 16th through the 18th. Well, Keene Place was not in Lexington. It was in Fayette County.
Right.
So that's why they say his visit was only the 3 days. But he was in Fayette County on the 15th, and that's where we're having the big event on the 15th. There are several other events mm-hmm. on the 16th and 17th in Lexington for people to participate in. I think one is at Embassy Suites.
Yes.
And there may be others. There's something in Gratz Park, I believe.
Yeah, there's a dedication of a couple historical markers across the city, and one of them is mm-hmm. in Gratz Park mm-hmm. With the Lafayette Trail. So he comes to Keene Place, and he's feted with a big ball.
He is, and I'm going to get into it. He is greeted by, at Keene Place, of course, by Colonel Abraham Bowman, and also, I think, dignitaries from the city of Lexington had come out to see him. Now, there's something that's really fascinating to me, and this was not in, I didn't learn about this until much later. Lafayette was accompanied on his 2 year or year plus travels through the Americas by a valet, who he brought with him from France. It was an African American valet, and he picked up a young mulatto, as he's described in all the histories, in the Caribbean. And of course, he was a freed man. Mm-hmm. So he gets to Lexington, and there's very little written about this, but there is one author who picked up a story on it. So he gets to Lexington, and this young man who's with him, in the words of the author, fell violently in love with Colonel Bowman's slave girl, who was at Keene Place because Bowman wanted to greet Lafayette at Keene Place. And he begs Lafayette for permission to remain in Lexington to court this girl. And Lafayette takes him aside and says, of course, he's a freed man. Mm-hmm. He said, yes, I will grant you leave from my employ, but you need to be aware that Kentucky is a slave state, and if you stay here, you could be made a slave. And he said, I'll take the chance. So he remains in Lexington, and there are the census records that show that he lived on the Bowman property on Bowman's Mill Road, married this girl, and I would love to be able to find descendants, if there are any descendants, because if there are, Lafayette gave Lexington, Kentucky something he didn't give any other city
right.
when he visited. Yeah. He left a lasting remembrance. So if there's anybody out there who has any connection with would have been enslaved people who worked for Bowman, I would love, they might have the name Bowman, would love to find these people.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And the other thing that Lafayette did while in Lexington related to enslavement, he tipped his hat to Lewis Hayden.
Oh, yes.
So after the fetting and the evening at Keene Place, he comes into town.
Right.
And proper Lexington, right? And he's paraded through town. And Lewis Hayden is along this route, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and then what happens?
Well, he recognizes Lewis Hayden. And he tips his hat, as you say, to Lewis Hayden. And, of course, we're going to have a dedication of a statue to Lewis Hayden. Is it this year?
Yes, this summer.
This summer. And I think it's going to be on North Limestone at the corner of maybe 4th Street and North Limestone, where the old Lexington Senior High School was, now Lexington Junior High School. And that'll be a big event.
Yeah.
And hopefully a lot of people will come out.
Yeah.
You know, Lafayette, when he came to Lexington, it was the largest event in the history of Lexington. Over 20,000 people greeted Lafayette. Of course, you have to remember, he was the last surviving general of the American forces. And Lafayette was a general in the American forces, not in the French forces. Mm-hmm. He was recognized with that rank by the French, but he was a general in the American forces. All the other generals had predeceased him. But he was so young when he got here. He was 19 years old when he got to America to fight for the American cause. So, and that is fascinating. Now, Lafayette was one of 13 aide-de-camps to George Washington. Mm-hmm. There are three aide-de-camps which stand out above all the other aide-de-camps. One, of course, was Alexander Hamilton. The second would be the Marquis de Lafayette. But the third would be John Laurens. Now, John Laurens was the only aide-de-camp of George Washington who did not survive the American Revolution. He was from South Carolina. He was at Yorktown. Mm-hmm. But after Yorktown, it took a while for the Treaty of Paris to be signed, so he went back home to Charleston, South Carolina. And the American forces had basically enveloped Charleston, and the British were basically starving. And they would send out forays to forage for food. And on one of those forays, the British set a trap, and John Laurens was killed, which was just tragic. But what's so tragic about it is John Laurens was the son of Henry Laurens. And Henry Laurens was the governor of South Carolina, the American governor of South Carolina. Henry Laurens was also the largest slaveholder in South Carolina. John Laurens was an abolitionist, like Alexander Hamilton, like the Marquis de Lafayette. And if he had lived, perhaps things would have been different in the South, or at least South Carolina. So one could only, you know, hope what might have been.
Right.
But those three were the closest to General Washington. They all spoke French fluently, some German also, and English. So that was an added bonus why he would have them. But Lafayette was initially, when he joined the American cause, he was given a title of Major General, but he wasn't given any troops. So at the Battle of Brandywine is where he was first recognized for his military prowess. He was injured. He was wounded and could have died, but he did not. And after, you know, Brandywine, he was with Washington every other step of the way. Valley Forge, he was with him. And I think the Battle of Monmouth, he was. And then what's so interesting is Washington sent him down to Virginia to kind of shadow Cornwallis. Mm-hmm. Cornwallis had been rooted out of the Deep South, out of South Carolina and North Carolina, in no small part to the Kentuckians at the Battle of Kings Mountain and at the Battle of Cowpens by the Delaware troops, which my ancestor was in, and the Maryland troops, and they with Daniel Morgan. So Cornwallis had come back to North and come to Virginia, and Washington sent Lafayette down, who kind of chased Cornwallis around. And I'll tell you who else was in Virginia at that time, is one Benedict Arnold. Now, Benedict Arnold was commanding a British cavalry unit, and he was not really attached to Cornwallis, and a good thing for him. If he had been and had been captured at Yorktown, I don't believe Washington would have permitted the British to surrender the way they did without turning over Benedict Arnold to mm-hmm. them. So that's just an interesting side note. But Lafayette was also chasing Benedict Arnold around at that time.
So Lafayette is sort of the last remaining hero of what becomes the United States coming out of the war. And he's brought back. He comes back to the United States to see the development after.
He's invited by President Monroe to come back.
Yes.
And when the invitation is extended, Horace Holly, who was the president of Transylvania University, was visiting in New York. So he was well aware of this invitation and that Lafayette had accepted it. So he immediately extended an invitation to Lafayette to come visit Kentucky. And when Lafayette came to America, the United States, he visited every state that was in existence in the United States. And Kentucky was one of the last states he visited. He got here in 1824, and he left in August and left in September 1825 or something. So he was here a little over a year. And everywhere he went, he was, you know, feted with royalty. Now, there's one thing that, a couple of things. One, Lafayette was a member of the Society of the Cincinnati, which I'm a member of. And there is an eagle that members of the Society of the Cincinnati wear when they go to, you know, formal events or public events. Lafayette always wore his Cincinnati eagle wherever he went. He was very proud of that. And in France, when he went back to France after the American Revolution, he was captured and imprisoned in the Bastille. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he did when he got out of the Bastille, he got a key from the Bastille. And I think Washington was dead by this time, but he presented the key to Washington's widow, and the key to the Bastille sits in Mount Vernon. When you visit Mount mm-hmm. Vernon, you can see the key that Lafayette presented to, you know, Washington's widow, which is just fascinating. Now, what I was going to say about Lafayette in France, he's considered much more of a hero in America than he is in France. He is revered in France for the ideals that he represented. He turned down the chance for a commission with Napoleon because he didn't like the idea that Napoleon had made himself emperor, and he was very much against that. But there are members of the French Society of the Cincinnati in France who are not warm and fuzzy about Lafayette. I would neglect if I didn't mention this. When the rabble from Paris came to Versailles and stormed Versailles, Lafayette was in command of 10,000 National Guard troops encamped at Versailles. He ordered the troops to stand down, which left 100 Swiss guards guarding the palace to defend the king and queen. And, of course, they were quickly dispatched. But I think Lafayette wasn't sure that it would be the right thing to fire on, you know, innocent people who were starving mm-hmm. and maybe wasn't sure what the National Guard troops would do. So, but here in America, he is rightfully considered a hero for all his contributions to our cause.
Right. And so you mentioned Horace Holly, mm-hmm. president of Transylvania. He comes through town. So we know he's coming. It's a huge event throughout the United States. Each stop is covered mm-hmm. wildly in the newspaper. makes it to Lexington, 20,000 people. What does he do in that 2 days that he's here?
Well, he's wined and dined and, you know, feted throughout Lexington. He does go visit Lucretia Clay. He had spent time with Henry Clay in Washington, D.C. before coming, embarking on this trip. But he pays a visit to Lucretia Clay. Let me back up. There's one. The person who spoke with Lafayette in France, who got the message from Monroe to extend the invitation to Lafayette to come to America, was none other than James Brown. And James Brown was the U.S. ambassador to France at this time. He had been a senator from Louisiana. But before that, James Brown was part of the Orlando Brown family from Frankfort. And if you were to drive out Winchester Road today, and just before you get to the turnoff for New Circle Road, there is a liquor store next to Brown Avenue. And Brown Avenue is named for Senator Brown. Now, Senator Brown married one of Hart, I can't think of his first name, but he is the father of Lucretia Hart Clay and the father of James Brown's wife. I always like to tell people James Brown married the pretty Hart girl, because all you have to do is look at a portrait of Lucretia Hart and, you know, juxtapose it next to her sister, and you know which one's the beauty and which one isn't. And she was a beauty, but they didn't have any children. Mm-hmm. And Henry and Lucretia named one of their sons after James Brown. So they were very close, as a matter of fact. So what was your other question? What did they do?
Yeah, so he meets with Lucretia after having spent some time with Henry Clay. What else does he do?
Well, he goes to a lot of balls, but one of the things that you should be aware of, there were two groups which Lafayette was very active in. One was, of course, the Society of Cincinnati, and the other was the the lodge here.
Masons.
Yep. He was very active in the Masons. He attended a grand ball that the Masons put on just at a center just off Broadway, between Broadway and Spring Street, I think they said. And that building no longer exists, unfortunately. But wherever he went throughout the United States, he stayed with a Mason or he stayed with a member of the Society of Cincinnati, since he was so close to those two groups. And, of course, George Washington had been a Mason, and that's why he became a Mason. I don't think Masons were very big in France.
Probably not.
But he became a Mason.
Yeah. So he went and he gave an address at Transylvania.
He did give an address at Transylvania. He gave an address at Transylvania, and they had people, students and other people, would recite poetry or other things that they had written for Lafayette, and they would use at least three languages, French, English, Latin, and he responded to each presenter in the language that they presented their presentation to him. So this man was very educated, very literate. Now, he got married when he was 16 years old, and he married a girl whose family was very influential and wealthy in France. And her family's home is in a place called Picpus. Picpus at the time was a close suburb of Paris. It's now part of Paris. And I have been to that cemetery. His wife's family, every one of his wife's family was guillotined during the Revolution. His family didn't live in Paris, and there were so few of them that didn't happen to them. But she was the only member of her family not guillotined, probably due to the fact that she was married to Lafayette. And you can go to that Picpus Cemetery and see all her family members' plots. They're not in the ground. They're up in a wall, but they weren't cremated. They were, the whole body was there. Now, there is a story that during World War II, the Germans let the American flag and the French tricolor, and I'm sure that his wife's family would have preferred to have the fleur-de-lis,
right.
But fly during the war. If that's the case, it's only because Picpus is so far out of the beaten path that the Germans never discovered it.
Right.
Because they would have torn those flags down. But they still fly in that little cemetery, little courtyard.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting because thinking about Lexington or about Kentucky and Lafayette's influence, Louisville uses a fleur-de-lis in their, you should know that on this podcast, we always give Louisville a little bit of heck, deservedly. But Louisville uses a fleur-de-lis in their city logo. Mm-hmm. We have Lafayette High School. We're in Fayette County. Is that connected, or is it just there were lots of French people here and we...
No, it's connected, you know, because of Lafayette's influence here. And, of course, Louisville, people don't know this. Louisville has a statue of Louis the 16th on the old courthouse lawn in Louisville. I think it would be great if we would have a statue of Lafayette in Fayette County. We really don't, and we should. And that was one of the things that I, when I spoke in 2020, and the mayor was in attendance, encouraged that. But, you know, we've not had any interest in that. But I would love, when we're taking all these statutes down, who else would be more appropriate than Lafayette, who was a hero of the American Revolution, a famous abolitionist, and stood for noble principles. He's somebody to emulate, someone to, you know, honor.
Yeah, and Lafayette High School.
It is.
It was named in his honor, correct?
It was, and they say that Lafayette High School has the seal of the Lafayette family in the high school, and that it's the only institution in the United States that the family has given permission to use the seal. Lafayette College doesn't have that permission. Nobody else has that permission. So, and hopefully the Lafayette High School band is going to lead the July 4th parade. There's been talk about that. I hope that comes to fruition. Nobody would be more appropriate than on the 200th anniversary of his visit than the Lafayette band.
Yeah, that's incredible. I didn't know that. We're doing all this commemoration here. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing in France at the same time?
Well, I'm going to be gone from all these May celebrations, unfortunately. The timing was just wrong. I have been invited to go to France with the Society of Cincinnati. So I'm representing the Delaware State Society, which my ancestor was, that I'm in this group, is from Delaware. And we are going to have an event at the U.S. Ambassador's Residence in Paris. We are going to also have two events at Versailles. One will be in the Hall of Mirrors, and there'll be a dinner dance, white tie ball, at the ballroom in Versailles. But let me go back to the, and I attended an event in Paris in 2001, but the Hall of Mirrors event is just amazing. They have all these French reenactors, and they have two representing each regiment, and they have a reenactor dressed in a private's uniform or a Navy seaman's uniform, and he carries the regimental colors. Then they had an officer who comes out in an officer's uniform of the regiment with a scroll, and he reads the names of every person in that regiment who died in the cause of the American Revolution. It lasted about 2 hours, and of course they were serving cocktails and hors d'oeuvres the whole time, so a lot of people barely got out of the Hall of Mirrors, but it was quite impressive.
Yeah, so, and even though Lafayette is not as beloved in France, there are still these opportunities to honor.
Yeah, they have statues of Lafayette all over France. And I've seen a statue of American soldiers in World War II, you know, with the sign, Lafayette welcomes you, or, you know, here. So they're well aware of his connection to the United States and how an important part he played in the founding of the United States. And the fact that he was so young and lived when he got here and lived so long past all the other generals gave him a special, you know, meaning to the American people.
Absolutely. I think there's the one other story about Lexington that I don't know how many folks know, but I hope that you can add some detail to. When Lafayette was here, we talked about at Transy that he gave an address and students sort of addressed him. He also went to a female secondary school?
Yes, which is, I think, just close to Gratz Park.
Yes.
And the director of this school changed the name to the Lafayette Academy. Was this the one that Mary Todd Lincoln attended?
Yes.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. Yeah, so this secondary school was called like the Lexington Girls School or something like that. And the director somehow convinces Lafayette to come hear this very long program from all of his students. And at that, renames the school the Lafayette Female Academy. Mary Todd is a student. They perform and poems and Latin and some of the similar things that happened at Transy, but with basically middle school aged girls.
There's a plaque in front of that house. Yeah. I knew people who used to practice law in that house. Mm-hmm. I think an accounting firm's in there now.
Yeah.
So it's just amazing, all this history in such a confined space.
Exactly. And the idea that, you know, this very well-known early celebrity, it's just like, sure, we'll go from Transy up the hill and go to this girls' school because they are doing something for me. When today, you know, if you think about it, even by the 1870s, that would have been so orchestrated, and there would have been no room for something like that to happen. So I think it speaks to the character of Lafayette and the way that he felt in these towns as he came through them.
Well, there's, and I'm not, I know who it is, but there's a Lexingtonian who has a teacup which Lafayette drank out of. It's like George Washington slept here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of Americans wherever he visited that have some object that he touched or drank out of. Now, Lafayette, when his boat landed, I think there were, the falls, or it was rough water, so he had to get out early at Carrollton or something, and promptly fell flat in the water when he got out, and they had to help him up. So there's a story about that. This was one of the most chronicled, events throughout every place he visited. There are people who, now there are two people that, you can get these books in the library. One of them was written by Erskine Hume, and he lived in Midway. Another was, and that's called Lafayette in Kentucky, published in 1937. And J. Winston Coleman, who was a good friend of my parents, wrote a book published in 1969, Lafayette's Visit to Lexington. And it was in one of those books, I believe, that I came across the term, about the valet who fell violently in love. So, you know, and those are the two best known histories of Lafayette, and they're confined primarily to his visit to Fayette County.
Yeah. That's fantastic to for our listeners to be able to see that and or to go see that and learn some of that deeper piece of it. Do you have any sort of wrapping up thoughts for the?
Well, a couple of things. One, the Lexington History Museum, which Mandy is the executive director, they are co-hosting several events with respect to Lafayette's visit to Fayette County in Lexington. There is one that is at the Keene Place. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's any tickets left, but they're going to reenact Lafayette's arrival into Fayette County. And they had a ball. Colonel Bowman hosted a ball for them at Keene Place. There's another event at Embassy Suites. I'm pretty sure there are tickets available for that event. And then there's, I think, an event in Gratz Park on that Sunday. So, I would encourage any and everybody to make inquiries. You can contact the Lexington History Museum, and Mandy or one of our staff members there can fill you in on the events, where they're taking place, when they're taking place, and if there's availability. And I hope a lot of people go. I feel terrible that I'm going to be in France, but not that terrible. I'll be having a good time.
Yeah.
So,
somehow you'll manage.
Yes.
Bill.
Well, thank you, Bill, for sharing all of this with us. And I hope folks do take advantage of this opportunity to commemorate Lafayette's visit. You know, there's only once that you can commemorate something that happened 200 years ago.
You're obviously not going to be around in 200 more years to do it.
Exactly. So we got to strike while the iron's hot. Alan, do you have any other questions?
Well, and how fortuitous that it also happens to be Lexington's 250th anniversary.
Yes.
And so it's all coming full circle as far as history is concerned.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the something the mayor talks about a lot and I think is really incredible. That Lexington existed before the Battle of Lexington and Concord, before Lafayette comes and makes helps make the United States possible. Lexington is named and is a place that's inhabited and known. So when he's here for the in 1825, Lexington is also kind of quietly celebrating its 50th anniversary of cityhood. Mm-hmm. And so there's that connection with the ways that we how and when we celebrate who we are. Mm-hmm. And that is made possible in some of the work that Lafayette did. And he makes those connections and his writings about democracy in the United States.
And this is at a time, correct me if I'm wrong, but Lexington was already known as the Athens of the West?
Absolutely. And Horace Holly has a lot to do with that. To get to diverge just a little bit, but Holly was a Northerner, born in Connecticut, educated at Yale, minister, really well respected, and so he had the connections across the country to make Transylvania a destination as a liberal arts college for wealthy young men. And that helps spur the image of the Athens of the West and of this really educated, really incredible place to be as the United States is blossoming, as the West expands. And Lafayette being here helps solidify that and his connection with Holly. Even though Holly's like run out of Transy within months of Lafayette's visit, it is a big part of how the city is seen across the country as we're growing.
And how about a quick callback? Dr. Andrew Patrick, just a couple of podcasts ago, was talking about this very subject.
Exactly, you can learn a little bit more about Transy and that growth and education in Lexington from Dr. Patrick. And I actually had the opportunity to speak with the Sayre School, who's celebrating a pretty significant anniversary in the next, I think it's 70 years next year that the Sayre School have been educating students in Lexington. so all of those connections come together so that we are, from our earliest moments, this site of education and growth and deep conversations about who we are and who we are within the country and how we work in the world. And it's just a really, it's very cool to be sitting at the 250th anniversary and being able to make those connections.
And to have a podcast to talk about it.
Of course. And we're so thankful for WUKY for making that possible.
Well, that is all the time that we have for today on Let's Talk History. Mandy and Bill, thank you so much for joining us. And we're going to be back very, very soon.
Thank
you. You've been listening to Let's Talk History, a monthly podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the Lexington History Museum. Subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts, or download Let's Talk History from the podcast page at WUKY.org. And if you haven't done so already, please make plans to visit the Lexington History Museum soon. Get started on your tour at lexhistory.org.